Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
You remember this time we visited with that guy from San Francisco, Stefan Thomas, the German-born programmer? He's an American now. I actually don't know what his citizenship is, but he lives in the USA. And he's the guy that had gotten in on Bitcoin early, couldn't remember his password, had tried it several times. And if I, as I understand correctly, you make 10 attempts to unlock your Bitcoins and incorrectly use the password, it permanently locks you out. And he was up to about 8 attempts and he couldn't remember the password. The amount of money he had in Bitcoin came to about $220 million when it was valued at $50,000. It's worth much more than that now. That's not why I'm calling him today. We're calling him today because last we spoke, he said that he was working on a way for companies, say magazines, newspapers, to charge you per click when you are surfing the internet, which is something that I happen to endorse. Stefan, thanks for joining us again. You're on WGN Radio. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
By the way, are you under 10? Do you still have an opportunity to unlock those Bitcoin?
I still do. I haven't really touched it or followed up much. I think partly because of I consider myself still in lockdown for the time being, and I'm still waiting my turn to get vaccinated. So I didn't want to travel or tackle any of the logistics yet.
Oh, but I'm sorry. That wouldn't require. I don't want to talk about this much, but we already have. But you unlocking Bitcoin doesn't require you to travel. It requires you to figure out what your password was, right?
It does require me to travel because they're not in the U.S. I never brought them to the U.S. They're stored in Europe, where I used to live when this all happened. And so I would have to go there. I would have to access the vault that they're stored in, et cetera, et cetera.
The vault? You make it sound like it's an actual thing you have to go to. It's a digital vault, right?
Well, no, it's a physical flash drive. And so, you know, I needed to store it securely somewhere. And so it is very much a physical vault.
So that information, you know where it is? It's on a flash drive somewhere in Europe?
Well, so the flash drive has 10 password attempts, and I've used 8 and all that stuff. So
oh, I see.
After I get the flash drive, I still have to break into it. But the first step would be to get the flash drive.
Right, and then recollect the other two, and no progress has been made on that. The last time we spoke, you said you were working on a venture that sort of resonated with me because, get a load of this. This week, I've been clicking around the internet. USA Today, the Denver Post, the Minneapolis Star Tribune. A lot of people are following this Chauvin trial. And when I see an article that I want to read, it flashes up a paywall saying you have to subscribe. Well, I don't want to subscribe to these newspapers for a year or even a month. I just want to read that one article that does not seem to be a means to allow me to just pay per view. And didn't you say last we spoke that you were working on something along those lines?
Absolutely, yeah. So I started a company that was based off of research I did at my previous job. And essentially, during that research, we discovered a way to do payments that are much more granular. So imagine like very, very small payments, less than 1 cent. And doing those payments very efficiently. And I thought that that could be used for that type of use case. And so I started a company, and we are actually offering, you know, I'd still call it like a beta or prototype quality product, but that essentially does that. And we have some users using it. We've got some websites using it, and we're still kind of trying to figure out the technology and trying to make it work well.
The transferring of funds, too. Would I have to put money in an account? Would you run it off my credit card? I mean, how would I make those small payments?
Yeah, so the way we're doing it right now is we actually bundling it as a flat rate. So you sign up with my company, Coil. You pay us $5 a month. And then every time you go to a website that has this enabled, we pay 0.01 cent per second as you're on that website. You can just browse the internet. You can pretty much just totally forget about it. But if the website wants to, they can give you free access to, or well, paid access to their various content. You don't have to think about it. It's all part of that flat rate.
Well, that you have to pay it. I mean, I've given you $5 a month. Now, when I go to the Denver Post or the Star Tribune in Minneapolis and it says you've got to pay, I'm automatically going to get through. Is that correct?
That's the idea. I think, you know, in practice, there are a lot of hurdles, which, you know, it'd be fun to talk about. But, you know, from a user experience point of view, yes, you can browse the web, and it's just sort of like as if you had sort of a, I don't know, like a premium, pass for the web, so to speak.
Well, this is, I don't know if this is a critical point for you and the success of your venture. My friend Steve Alexander and I were talking about this the other day, and I said that in order to read that one article, I think I should pay a tenth of a penny or something like that. And then Steve said, well, that's pretty cheap. I should have to pay. What was the price you had me paying on that, Steve? It was like...
$1.99 or something like that for a single article.
No way. What do you think about that? What's a fair price of that, Stefan?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, that has to be the publishers who decide that, right? It's their content, their copyright. They can decide what they want to charge for it. I think the way that we've been approaching it so far is we started with this very simple setup where the user pays like a small flat fee, and we pay out the same amount regardless of what website you go to. But I think in the future, you know, we envision that there would be many providers like us. The interaction between providers like Coil and the website is standardized. It's a web standard that is being proposed. And so it would be different providers would have different websites that they're willing to pay for. They would have different price points. Mm-hmm. You know, as a provider, we might try to get really good at detecting like the quality of the content, because you probably don't want to give a bunch of money to somebody making just clickbait or machine-generated right. content or something like that. And so it would be a whole ecosystem. So it wouldn't just be us. It would be different companies competing on how much to pay and what content to include.
I have the Chicago Tribune in front of me. The cover price for this single issue of this paper newspaper I have, today's paper cost $3. I did not know it was that expensive. It's $3 for one issue of the Tribune. So, Steve, to your point, $2 for that one article is not bad, right? Because if I wanted that article in print, I'd have to pay $3 to get it. But that's okay. But at least if I bought the whole paper, I'd get all of the articles. Stefan, if I wanted three stories from the Chicago Tribune today, I'm trying to figure out what the right pricing on this would be, you know? $3
sounds
high.
One of the challenges that we've actually run into is that the economics for newspapers are quite interesting. Like, they have a huge incentive to try to drive you towards a subscription, because let's say they can get, you know, 10,000 people to buy one article, but they can get 1,000 people to get a subscription, but they make so much more off of the subscription that even if it means locking out 9,000 of those people from consuming the content at all, that might still be economically better. And so similar with our model, I think our model would be amazing for the news industry at large if everyone had such a subscription. But while there are only few people that have it, it's actually better for the newspaper to try to get people to subscribe to that particular newspaper, even if they can only get a tiny fraction of their potential readership to do that. And so big challenge for us, and like I think where a lot of the innovation has to come in for us, is how to overcome that chicken and egg problem, and how do we get to a scale where this actually starts to make sense for people.
Yeah. Well, I don't know why I'm working so hard for the newspapers on this or trying to find a way for us to pay for something that we're getting for free. I actually do know why I'm doing that, and I think you would like the same reason as well. Speaking of selling stuff, Stefan Thomas is the co-founder of a company called Coil. Coil.com is his website, and he and I have talked the last couple of months about how the internet is changing, how you have instant access to things, but now you're running into more and more paywalls. And I don't want to subscribe to a lot of the things that I'm being asked to subscribe to, so it can be frustrating. My interest in charging people per view, Stefan, would seem to benefit those companies, you know, those newspapers. I keep talking about the Minneapolis Star Tribune because I've been reading it online with the Chauvin trial. But in a way, I think this would benefit the consumers as well. If I only had to pay, what did you say, a fraction of a penny to read an article that I would otherwise, the Wall Street Journal's an example. Boy, if you can get them on board, that would be pretty good, Stefan. But I don't want to subscribe to the Wall Street Journal right now. And that's an expensive online paper. They've got good content, but I don't want to read it all of the time. The other funny thing, I think, is that I can cheat. There are ways to copy the URL for an article, paste it elsewhere, and then print it out. So a lot of people are getting around it. You would almost think that they would be interested in your service of finding a way to charge per view, you know?
Yeah, and those are exactly the kinds of use cases where we try to find a niche, namely sites that are currently funded with ads. You can say like, hey, turn off the ads for our users. And that's sort of a benefit where if you're currently using an ad block, you're kind of depriving publishers of their income. But if you use our service as well, then you can, you know, make up for that and you can support them without having to look at their ads. But again, I think there's definitely a challenge around how do you get this started as a small tech company that doesn't have the kind of reach that like a Google has that can just build it into browsers, etc.
Somebody suggested to me, having heard us talk last time, that you could do a thing where if I clicked on the ad, then the newspaper, say, would know it. The sponsor would know it. The advertiser would know it. And that would be a way to get into the site. A lot of times when you see ads on sites, you minimize them or close them before you look at them. But what if the entry to the newspaper or magazine was you had to go through the commercial? Is there any sense in that?
Yeah, we actually did look into that together with some friends I know who are deeper in the ad industry than I am. And the conclusion we came to was you may as well go directly to the publisher. Yes, there's a lot of infrastructure already. So we could, for example, bid on ads and say, like, you know, if we win that auction using the user's own money, then we don't show ads. But you're essentially paying off that entire ad ecosystem where there's a lot of long value chain with lots of different people taking a cut. And there's really no point in doing that if the technology supports going directly from the user to the publisher. Why pay off all these intermediaries?
Well, the last thing I'll ask you to comment on, and that is my concern is for healthy journalism in America. And I think too many of us are getting it for free because we're finding cheats or we're borrowing passwords. And more newspapers, more and more radio and TV stations are paring down their staffs because they're having trouble finding ways to monetize this. So what I'm really trying to do here is save these industries and keep them as vigorous as I can, right?
Yeah, I mean, that, you know, part of my motivation for starting the company was that I'm concerned as a consumer of news that, yeah, you know, I heard a lot of my favorite journalists complain that they couldn't cover the Hong Kong protests because, well, a certain government didn't like it, and so a lot of advertisers that were worried about selling into that market were pulling their ads from their content, which was impacting their revenue, and so their publishers ended up not liking when they covered this topic. And so I was like, whoa, there's something really, really dangerous happening here, and we really need to get back to a model where, you know, the user isn't the product, they're actually the customer, and so there isn't like a third party, namely the advertiser, that really, you know, gets editorial input into what news we get to consume.
Yeah. All right, Stefan, I'll let you go. You want to make a prediction? How successful is this idea that you and I are talking about going to be? What's the future for that idea?
So the thing that's really encouraging is we're getting a ton of support from, you know, people who care about this kind of stuff. Like we have a grant that we've put together with the Mozilla Foundation, who are, you know, the creators of one of the more privacy-preserving open browsers out there, Firefox, and a number of other organizations. And so we are starting to build sort of an ecosystem. So I'm cautiously optimistic, although I definitely recognize the scale of what we're trying to do.
If I go to coil.com, you've got a site up and running now, right?
That's right. And people can sign up for $5 a month and it'll support us and support our work and it'll support all the creators that are early adopters of this technology. But I will caution you, like, it's not necessarily ready for mainstream yet. You don't have to be a developer or anything, but expect it to be early days.
Stefan Thomas, coil.com. All right, Stefan, you have an advocate here. If I can do something for you down the road, let me know.
Much appreciated. Thank you.